The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 556. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight, I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? How's it going? I'm back.
Carlos Romero.
Yo.
Brett Murdoch.
What up, people?
And Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
All right, we are back with another one. Couple things here. Adam may or may not join us. I don't know if he's at the TV terminal tonight. We'll see. Chris may or may not join us, but Chris won't be around for a little while because he's going on vacation, which is good for him, you know?
Yeah, he needs some serious vacation time. That's quite a bit of overtime.
Yeah.
And it's good he's taking a vacation right before his birthday.
That's right. And I believe Brian is still in Poland. I'm not even making this up. He's there somewhere.
Is it Poland? What is he doing there?
It's Polish. I don't even know what a Polish accent would be.
I know. I'm almost.
I feel like generic Russian. You know.
I feel like it's like some sort of Slavic.
You know. Oh man, go ahead.
And then that's when our boy chimes in.
Yeah.
Because he's Polish.
Yeah, I was going to say, Big John, I went to his wedding. It's a Polish wedding. Yeah, it was a lot of, what's the, oh my God, Borat type stuff, you know? I like.
Hello, Tony. You're a very nice person.
Yeah, it was like a lot of Borat people there, you know? They're all dancing and shit. It's crazy. I was like, everything's a dance, you know? Hey! You know? Hey. Cousin Larry type shit, you know?
It's like Mamushka time at the Addams Family.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it's like, hey, you'll never get this. Oh man, wasn't Balki from like Greece? I think that's a whole other different part of the world.
No, I think he was from like a fake place.
Yeah, from Nepos, right?
Yeah, he's from Nepos.
That sounds Greek to me.
It sounds Greek. I don't know, but yeah.
Polish people hate Russians. Yeah, I know. I'm aware of that, but I'm an American. Yeah. To me, they're all the same.
They all have the similar Slavic accents.
There you go, man.
Sorry to all of our Polish fans out there.
Yeah, shout out to Poland. All I know about Poland is they keep getting invaded. That's all I know, you know? And their best time, like their golden age was when they were like linked with another country, Poland, Lithuania. You know, that's all I know. And I think they had the original Teutonic Knights in their vicinity.
Ooh.
That's
some $50 history lessons right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I could keep going. The Teutonic Knights would eventually be, you know, go to front Prussia, you know. All right. Anyway, that's enough history for now. Oh, but Barry Burton. Now we are so happy we do the dance of joy. Oh, man. All right. So let's get into it. Interesting week in the gaming industry. The big story, I guess, there's some other stuff that happened, but the big one was the release of the Asus ROG Xbox Ally. It's finally out. And a lot of conversations have been happening. We've talked about this before because the conversation started way before, but now it really intensified. Is it or is it not an Xbox? So you have one side. Oh. Yeah. So you have one side yelling, it is an Xbox. Other side yelling, it is not an Xbox. And people have just been going at it. Ironically enough, all talk about the price has gone away because everyone's just concentrating on that aspect. As a matter of fact, if you go to the Tom Scott YouTube channel, I did a my video review of the system. Unfortunately, I don't have it here to show to you guys because I lent it to one of our video guys so we could mess around with it. But in the video, you know, the thumbnail is me holding it, and the background says, this is not an Xbox. So that's my stance. I'm like, no, it's an ROG Ally. You know how I know it's an ROG Ally? Because I've reviewed the ROG Ally. This is an ROG Ally. But the main difference is, and this is how you could tell that the that these crazy people who were like angry at me in the comments were not watching a video. Because I said, this is the best Windows handheld ever. Because they finally have a leaner version of Windows on it. Like, it's very, very, like, you do have to go through the initial Windows 11, you know, setup and everything. But after that, you never have to see Windows again unless you want to, you know, and it really helps with the performance and battery life. So I think it's a great system. And man, and Carlos, I think you could appreciate this. Those grips make a fucking difference, man. I know you said that with the Portal, like that shit makes a difference, man.
It just makes it more comfortable and makes it feel like you're like you can go through longer playthroughs with the handheld. I mean, when with a Steam Deck, it just feels like you're not gripping anything, man. You need some grip, you know. You need some good grip if you want to enjoy playing games and other stuff too. But it's a must for me, man. After playing with the Portal, you know, the Portal doesn't do anything other than stream, so it's unfortunate that that's all it does. But playing it with the controllers in mind is just something that I feel like it can't go back to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's funny, like, even though this is not like during actual gameplay, while I was filming the video, because I like to typically hold a handheld like near my chest and stuff, and they're always so fucking uncomfortable to hold, right? But this one is like, ooh, like even though I was holding it backward, I'm like, this is comfortable as fuck, you know? Mm-hmm. Really great thing. But no, at the end of the day, it is not an Xbox because you can't play all your Xbox. If you could play all your Xbox PC games and all your Xbox Play Anywhere games, and there's a lot of them, you know, but it's not an Xbox. But I'm like, to me, here's the thing. I understand because Adam is firmly of like really mad about that, right? But I'm like, this is still, even though that is kind of a bummer, it's still objectively a great handheld, you know, that Z2 Extreme chip. Fucking nice, because it has the latest version of FSR. For you guys who don't know, that's basically AMD's version of DLSS with the frame boosting. You turn that shit on, you're good to go, butter, as Adam would say. But yeah, it's so it is kind of disappointing that the even though I would prefer if people were talking about how cool the handheld is and how Windows is getting there, because remember Phil Spencer's been talking about this for a while. Like, we want to better version of Windows for handhelds. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about, is this an Xbox? It's not an Xbox. And who, you know, whose fault is that? Microsoft marketing it as a fucking Xbox, which it is not, you know? But yeah, what do you guys think about, you know, the machine and the chatter you've seen about it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about this previously. I was, at first, I was super hyped about the handheld because of the controllers.
Yeah.
The controllers, number one, and number two, the, you know, the new OS. But after I figured out that it's not going to have quick resume, I was like, I soured pretty deep on that. And then the second hitter was the price. It was like $1,000 because I'm not going to get the lower end one. Definitely going to want to get the X. And $999 was just too steep for all of that. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to pass on that. But, you know, I'm glad people are enjoying it. But yeah, the criticisms about, you know, this is an Xbox are valid because, you know, I know a lot of Xbox fans, including Adam, like you mentioned, were upset that you can't actually play the actual Xbox games they have in the digital libraries that they bought. So it's unfortunate. But maybe, I don't know, maybe Game Pass already has those games. I don't know who can cross-verify.
Not Rockstar Table Tennis.
Oh, that's it. That's it.
That's the one Adam wants. He doesn't care about anything else. He wants that Rockstar Table Tennis.
Yeah, man. So if Xbox can make it so, you know, the next ROG Ally has an OS that's even better, more optimized, and has quick resume. Excuse me.
Yeah,
I might do a toe dip on that.
Well, here's the thing, right? Microsoft is gonna allow other like manufacturers to use that leaner version of Windows, so you won't be just relegated to this thing for that long, you know.
I have a question.
Yeah.
There's someone mentioned it being kind of funky getting Steam games into your Xbox. Did you Did you ever mess with that?
I didn't have a problem with that at all. You know, I think okay. I think this is both on the handheld and on my PC. On my PC, if you go into the Xbox app, I think it's like just do a toggle. And I think you may have to sign into whatever the launcher may be, like Steam. I think you have to do that at least once. But it's been fine with me, you know. No problems at all. Real quick, Jeffrey, what's going on, brother? He goes, would you want to see that thinner Windows OS on desktop? For gaming, yeah. But the thing is, like, because when you toggle, because you have game mode, I think it's called, and then Windows desktop. When you switch to that, it becomes the full Windows experience, you know? So it's not like, even the Windows that you can navigate is like a thinner version. No, I'm calling it a thinner version as a catch-all. It's basically just puts all the main Windows shit in the background and just focuses on games. There are some apps that do this for you kind of already, but this does it to like an extreme end. But when you switch over to Windows mode, it's the full Windows experience, you know, which is kind of, it's a clever way of doing it, I think. This is not going to be relevant to anyone who buys this thing, but when we got it, we had to install a fuck ton of drivers and shit. It took us like 2 hours to get it ready, you know? Kind of interesting. They made the reviewers go through all that shit, but the regular person doesn't. But I'm glad you guys don't, you know? And it is really cool. Like, I'm going to ask a really stupid question now, Carlos. You're my Windows guy here. Uh-oh. Is there a way for me to disable, like, me having to put my password into Windows every time I log in? Even with my PC, I have to do this. Like, can I disable that?
You can do a fingerprint. If you have a fingerprint reader, you can do a code, like number code.
I'm saying, can I get rid of that?
Oh, the entire just log in every time?
The whole thing, yes. Either way? Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, because on my PC, I have to do that. And on this thing, that's the only time you'll have to interact with Windows. When you turn it on, it's going to ask you, you know, like what your password is. But after that, it instantly goes into the Xbox launcher and you never have to see Windows again unless you want to. But I will tell people, if you buy this thing, at least once a week, make sure you do update shit, because this is still Windows. You will need to update stuff, you know?
No.
It won't just automatically do it for you, that I know of. I hope I'm wrong about that. But this is me. I'm just doing everything manually. So it's possible it may do that stuff for you. I think if you enable, the toggler says automatic updates as they become available. I think if you enable that, you should be good. I would still check it just in case. But again, I think the system's fantastic. Yes, it doesn't have an OLED screen. I get it. But I think the gains in performance, and the gains aren't that crazy big, by the way. It's like maybe an extra like 3 or 5 frames. But to me, that's what makes a difference. You know, I also like the fact that you could toggle on the TDP. Right. I think performance mode is 17 watts, which is really good if you don't want to drain the battery. But if you want to go ham, you go to 35 watts in turbo mode. You know, that's what I did. And just like a gaming laptop, you want to get the real better performance, plug that shit in. I know that kind of negates the whole purpose, you know, for some people. But I'm like, if you're just chilling somewhere, like, plug it in, you'll get even better performance in that. But yeah, overall, I'm very happy with the system. And I'm looking forward to seeing this version of Windows on the Legion Go 2 I reviewed recently, because that thing is fucking dope with the OLED big screen and everything, but it's still Windows. You still got to deal with all that bullshit. So if you get this version of Windows on there, that's going to be good. You know, I still think SteamOS is better. It's just, it's more intuitive, but this gives you the versatility of Windows. Like Huel's been saying in the chat, you could, you know, download some games that maybe aren't available, if you know what I mean, you know, emulate and shit like that. It gets my stamp of approval for sure. But we'll see. But yeah, the conversation's just been funny, man. Because I'm like, it's not an Xbox, guys. It's not an Xbox. But some guys are going, Carlos, you'll love this one. One guy said in the comment section, saying that this is not an Xbox, it's like saying a PS5 is not a PlayStation because it doesn't play PS1 games. That's just stupid.
Yeah.
Like what?
Well, I mean, They don't advertise it as such.
Yeah, they advertise it as a PlayStation 5.
Right.
You know?
It's dumb. I mean, I get it. Like, there's a lot of people who want to knock on it. So, you know, they got to say that stuff. But, to me, it's the price. It's the price more than anything. I don't know if people are, I mean, it's probably selling decent. So
it is.
Might be wrong, but, you know, I think the price is probably the biggest, you know, factor with this. Because from what I hear, you shouldn't want the lower value one because it's not. It's no bueno.
Yeah. We actually, my manager, Jason, he's crazy. He reviewed both of them, you know, because they sent him both systems. He gave the other one, the lower spec one, a 3 out of 5. He's like, don't bother, man. He's like, don't bother. Mm-hmm. Performance isn't there. A certain number was Tony, who makes this device hardware. It's Asus. It's not Microsoft. It is not Microsoft. It is Asus. They make this thing, you know? And to your point, what are the first two names that you see on this thing? Asus ROG. That's already an existing brand, bro. You know, so that right there tells you everything.
All it is a ROG Ally with the Xbox theme. That's it.
Yeah, Xbox theme. You know, the handles. That's pretty much. There's a big Xbox button. It's the same thing, man.
It literally just has an Xbox skin on it, and that's about it. There's nothing special about that. They didn't, they don't have the Xbox OS, you know, whatever, or, you know, version of it, the, you know, the blades working on it.
It's not the OS,
So it's a PC with, it's a normal gaming PC, you know, like handheld PC, you know, gaming unit with an Xbox theme.
Yep, pretty much. So yeah, you know, it's not an Xbox, but it's pretty dope. I'll say that. All right, let me look at these comments. The Black RG Ally X should have been 8 inches, but again, the reason this is 7 inches is because, like Manny said, it's an ROG Ally. The middle of it is literally a regular Ally. It's just the sides that are different, you know. So they weren't going to give you a bigger screen. They also weren't going to give you OLED, and they weren't going to give you a carrying case because the regular ROG Ally doesn't have any of those. You know, I'm not making that as an excuse. I'm just pointing to the fact that what this is. It's an ROG Ally, you know? All right, man.
Did you say which one you preferred over that one or the Lenovo Legion Go 2?
This one. I understand for some people the OLED overtakes everything. For me, performance overtakes everything. And performance and comfort, you know? So it's like, I get better frame rates on this thing and the controller grips are good. I'm going with this one. That's just me, though. Like one of my other colleagues, he's like, I don't give a fuck about that. I want that OLED. You know? Mm-hmm. So I get it, man. Who else has the Xbox is basically running Windows 11 and Xbox OS on a VM. Yeah. But yeah, it would be interesting if, like, they could get the Xbox OS on that thing. And Quell, you mentioned this earlier. There are videos to this, too. If you have like a regular Xbox, if you have a regular Ally, you know, the original Ally, you actually can get that lean version of Windows on it. You have to do some workarounds. It's not easy, but you can do it, you know. One of my colleagues also did it. He did it on the Legion Go S that comes with Windows. He installed the newer version and it worked out well, you know, but you got to do a lot of tinkering and shit. Unless anybody else has anything they want to add to that. We'll move on to the next thing, also about hardware. So this week, reports started coming out from reputable people, by the way, that have gotten shit clear, you know, right before, that the PlayStation 6 and the next Xbox will arrive in 2027. And I know some of you may be going, oh, that's too early. For the past two generations, it's been 7 years. This would be 7 years, so I think this is going to happen. We also got like another report basically saying that the chip that these things are using have been finalized, and the Xbox will be like noticeably more powerful than the PlayStation 6, which makes sense because the next Xbox is reportedly basically going to be a PC, you know. And
this is the PC.
Yeah, it's the PC. And interestingly enough, this chip is for three different machines. Two of them are PlayStation machines, which goes with that other report we've been hearing about how we're going to get a regular PlayStation console and a handheld, right? And Carlos, this is what I think is going to probably happen. The same chip, but it'll have a lower TDP on the handheld. I don't think, like, you know how we kind of speculated, like, maybe it'll be a Z1 Extreme situation. Maybe it's not going to be that. Maybe it's just the same chip with a lower, you know, TDP, you know? I think that's what may be happening. But yeah, what do you guys think about it? Because again, when you hear it first, like, wait, 2027, it's too early, you know? But then you think about it, like, oh yeah, 7 years makes sense. But at the same time, this generation really got started, what, last year? Barely, you know? We're still getting remakes of shit. We're still getting cross-gen games. And as we talked about on the previous show, none of us on here, and we're hardcore gamers, right? True gamer. You know, shout out to Icon, you know? Icon? None of us are exactly excited about these things, man. For what? What are we getting excited about? What games? We're gonna get fucking PlayStation 5 games on these things, bruh. You know, I'll let you go to this, but I just want people to understand. It's like this is kind of related to a conversation I had with one of my colleagues from Tech Radar. This is about MacBooks, but it applies here, right? He was like, "Yo, why the fuck are we getting a new MacBook now? Like, everybody's fine with the M4. We didn't need another one." And I was like, "Yes, we did. Oh, now we did. Their shareholders wanted that shit, right?" So I think part of this, the reason you're gonna absolutely get a new console in 2027 is because shareholders are like, "Where's that new console? Where's the money?" You know?
Yeah. It's the same reason why they really, when we said that they should have held on the PlayStation 5 during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But they still released that shit then.
Yeah.
So
they released new consoles during a fucking pandemic. You know, that makes no sense. But again, they had to appease their shareholders, you know.
If they waited a year, there probably would have been a lot more offerings too. Because you remember the following year, there was a lot more.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of the logistics of these things were already predetermined long before that. So they can't really mess with that stuff, especially when you're talking about millions of SKUs, you know, going in the wild. Yeah. Which explains why, you know, even after all that, we did get a good amount of consoles, but then immediately after, there was just nothing.
Yeah. No, you're right about it. And that's a good point. That's the other reason we kind of have to get these systems at a certain time. It's like they've already talked to like chip manufacturers, like, okay, we need this allotment for this time, and they have to get them out there, you know? But like based off of this generation, very hard to get excited about this, you know?
That's why we can't get an actual portable Xbox console.
That's right. It's crazy.
Yeah, somebody else has got to make it.
Somebody else. That's right. Yeah. And we did discuss that drama where like that the Xbox handheld was canceled. Jess Corden came to the rescue saying it hasn't. I don't know. It's some craziness, man. by the way, I like the code name of the Xbox system, Magnus.
Magnus.
This is pretty fun. I wonder what the hell they're going to call it, the Xbox. Who are you? I wonder what they're going to call it, like the Xbox 50? Xbox, you never know what the fuck they're going to call these things.
Yeah, it's like, we are one. And then it's like something.
I feel like at the very least.
Ultra the Magnus, naming convention. There you go.
Yeah, the Ultra Magnus.
I feel like at least 10% of Xbox's consoles failures have been attributed to that stupid name convention ever since the Xbox One. Like, come on, man. You can't name it an Xbox One when you're in the third one.
Makes no sense. No, I agree. At least 10%.
At know? Least 10%. The rest of them was, you know, Don Matrick and his
Don Matrick, yeah. We have a console for that. It's crazy.
Speaking of that, there was a video that popped up not long ago about how badly it all, it literally aggregated all the things that led to that, to the state of Xbox.
Yeah. Ironically, and this was maybe five, six years ago, I did a Tony's Take on that. It was 5 years. Whoa. It was 5 years after that, you know, that announcement. And I was like, they've never recovered. 10 years later, they still have not recovered. You know?
That's Donnie.
Donnie, yeah. Don was an idiot. Damn, even Kuel saying that, Brett.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by the 7 year time frame. I know we've had discussions about that, whether this was going to get extended. I never bought into that because just felt like, you know, if a pandemic didn't stop this one, the other things was just going to be, you know, smooth sailing. So yeah, 7 years, 2027. I mean, like Tony mentioned, the generation has yet to begun, or it barely just started because we're waiting for it to begin. I don't know where the hell, you know, the console defining generation games are. I mean, Elden Ring is a PS4 game. But I mean, we kind of adopted it as a PS5 just so we can be nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, other than that, you know, there really hasn't been that many of like, wow, like this defined the generation. A lot of really good games, you know, a lot of great games, but nothing that, you know, made you believe like, damn, this is what made the generation. You know, Cyberpunk, it was technically last generation, but, you know, it only worked in this generation.
Yeah, we had to adopt that one too.
That one was adopted too. So, yeah, I mean, I wonder, are we the only ones that feel this way about the consoles? I don't know how, you know, the general public and, you know, the younger generations are feeling about new console generations. I feel like most console generations used to mean something. now it's like, I feel like it was something for us that we used to look up to. And, you know, for folks who are younger than us, I wonder how they feel about new console generations. It might just be like, eh.
Damn, Two Mecha says The Last of Us was the game of the generations because it was for two generations.
Yeah, it was for two generations.
I'm telling you, man, I had this conversation with a colleague months ago, and I just asked him, like, hey, what is the genre? What is the generation defining game of this generation? And as a joke, he said The Last of Us Remaster. I'm like, no, that's correct. That actually definitively defines this generation. What is this generation, right? Remakes and sequels. That's this generation in a bag right there, you know? It's insane. No, correct. Well, fuck, you're right. It is three generations for The Last of Us. Three.
Yes, three.
PlayStation 3, 4, and 5.
Fuck, the GTA, you know? And this is a story we got coming up earlier. We got the story coming up later, excuse me. Fucking, you know, and was it Sucker Punch? They're like, we're a one game studio now. You ain't getting four games from us anymore. It's crazy.
When is the last time they did multiple games at a time? Must have been a while now.
Yeah, because for a while they were just doing the Sly Cooper games. Like, what other games? Granted, they were pumping them out fast, you know, but still. Yeah.
But and then they did Infamous. And then they Ghost of Tsushima was after that, and
yeah,
that's it.
And they were the Infamous studio for a little bit, you know. But they released a Sly game in the middle of that, you know.
Yeah, could have been.
But we'll get to that in a bit. But yeah, just given how this generation has gone, I don't know, man. But I heard a rumor that Rich is very excited about the PS6 and Xbox. So, Rich, what do you say to that? Let's see if he mutes himself. Mr. Richard Bailey Jr., people who need to hear your voice. Oh, he may not be around.
He's like, I don't know where you've heard that, Tony.
There he is.
Yeah. Sorry that there was a technical issue. I'm definitely not excited for the PlayStation 6 or the Xbox, whatever the hell the next Xbox is called. But as long as the coalition is around, I still will need to be covering games on these platforms. So I'm not going to say that I will never play on these platforms. Yeah. But I'm definitely not excited. I can say that in confidence. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's part of the job, right? That's how it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. But yeah, no, because I've seen people get very upset. Like, no, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Yes, it is. 2027. You can pretty much put that shit in stone, you know? And yeah, well, we are four generations of a Zen, because we're on Zen 5 right now. And I believe PlayStation, what Zen generation of AMD was the PlayStation 5? Is that just one or two?
I'll look it up.
Yeah, look it up. It is going to be six, yeah. So But at the same time, it's like, if we're not getting the games, what's the point of having all this advanced shit, you know? So, and I say that with a grain of salt because, you know, I still maintain that graphics have plateaued, you know? We're not seeing the games that we used to.
Zen 2.
Zen 2. So it might be 4 by the time. But we don't know if the new chip is going to be Zen 6, but I don't know, man. We've been talking about this all generation. I just feel like a parrot at this point, you know, repeating the same shit. But it
let me say something about graphics. Oh, God. I feel like there's two things that are holding back graphics in video games. One of them is art style or lack thereof, you know, art direction. And two is the fact that everyone is using the same goddamn engine.
Oh, yeah. Unreal.
Everyone's using Unreal. So they're kind of just, you know, use the same assets, use the same type of things. You know, it kind of, the games look really samey. Yeah. I feel like sometimes the best games are made on, you know, the best looking games are made on, you know, dedicated engines. I know that it's expensive as hell, but you know, Cyberpunk, like, is probably one of the best examples, even though it ran like shit, it looked great, you know? So Crysis with the CryEngine did it for a long time. Even the Metal Gear games when, you know, they would come out on the Fox Engine. So I feel like those games, and they looked really distinct from other types of games. Now they all look kind of the same. They all same. They have the same kind of coat of paint.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing I can't say, at least say about Naughty Dog games. They look like Naughty Dog games, right? Because they're using their own engine. But that's it's becoming rare now. I won't be surprised if they go to Unreal eventually, you know?
Oh.
And I believe, yeah, Sucker Punch is also... Sony Studios at least have proprietary engines. You know, but yeah, every other game, you know, is not upsetting. All right, let's move on here. This was interesting. Steam has crossed 41 million players, concurrent players, and it's like gotten like 10 million extra people in the last like 5 years or something like that, which kind of shows you people are really moving to PC, you know, which is pretty interesting.
That's the type of engagement I can appreciate.
Yeah, exactly. Concurrent players. Yeah. Let me see if I can. Damn. Yeah, the site I linked to here just threw up. Oh, you're using ad blocker. I can't read shit. But yeah, I'm not surprised. And especially now with the proliferation of like game, you know, handheld gaming PCs, that kind of makes more sense too, you know? So I'm not surprised by that, and it could potentially help Xbox, probably won't, when they release their PC. They need to just change the name of the fucking brand. I think that brand is so tainted. Xbox, call it something else.
Let's call it Windows Gaming.
There you go. May as well, right? But yeah, no, I'm not surprised by that. Me saying I'm not surprised is not bad, but the number is pretty crazy. 41.6 million, excuse me?
Yeah, I wonder if we've gotten these types of numbers from either PlayStation or Xbox.
I highly doubt it.
Because we get numbers like on PlayStation, what is it, like over 100 million subscribers or something like that?
Yeah, but what about concurrent? That's the thing that's going here.
It means people are engaged.
Uh-oh. So let's see here. I'm reading this from TechSpot. Steam has reached a new milestone that underscores the accelerating momentum behind global PC gaming. As we said, data from SteamDB shows Valve's digital distribution platform recently surpassed 41.6 million concurrent users, an all-time high that more than doubles its peak from 5 years ago. Wait, doubles? Fuck! So 5 years ago, it was like 20 million? Wow.
Yeah, concurrent. So I guess it has to be like this one event where just everyone is playing at the same time. Maybe some couple of games released around that time.
And maybe it's not new users. It could be like everybody just decided, let's get on right now, son.
Yeah, let's get on Battlefield 6.
Yeah, right. Well, we're gonna talk about that. You know, but yeah, pretty interesting stuff right there. Speaking of Battlefield 6, this one did surprise me. Battlefield 6 sold 7 million copies in 3 days. Has any Battlefield been this successful? Holy shit.
I don't think so. I've never seen these type. You barely see these type of numbers for any game. Like, this is a Call of Duty esque type of release window. It's crazy.
Are Chinese players playing this shit? Like, what are you stuff drifting into? Like, what the fuck, man? Like, I know the beta was like very, very well received. So maybe that's all it took. Or perhaps also. People are tired of Call of Duty, you know, because I know people are not excited about the new Call of Duty. Even Adam's like little like wishy-washy on it. This is Adam we're talking about.
He did say this is it.
Well, did he say it? Because he says that every
year. Oh, yeah. Well, remember, we gave him shit because we told him, Adam, you say that every year. No, I don't.
I don't. Bring up the tape. He is like Lorray, isn't he? Like, no, you said it, bro. You know?
So, according to a Google AI overview, Battlefield 6... the one that just came out is currently the best-selling game in the series.
I could in 3 days.
In 3 days.
Wow.
What kind of sazon did they put in that to get?
That's what I'm saying. Sazon, right? Shit, they threw everything in there. I don't get it. Okay, I'm reading this from IGN. So I'm reading my do you guys have an explanation for this shit? Oh, Vince Zampella. Yeah. Rich, what do you think is attributed to this, man? Because it can't just be one thing. It seems like a perfect storm of things happened here.
And he didn't. And Rich didn't buy me one for my birthday either, so it doesn't make sense.
Oh. That's exactly what I was going to say. Vince Zampella is behind this Battlefield. Everyone knows he worked on Titanfall.
Yeah.
So that absolutely impacted. Also, you mentioned the beta.
Yeah.
Yeah, the beta played a role. And even with the way that they roll out the game, the reviews came out the day before launch. I'm actually still working on a review, but I would say, I believe it sold that much because it actually is a good game. I know that the campaign has gotten critiqued to hell, but the multiplayer, which is what people will actually care about this game for, the multiplayer is excellent. So, I think it makes sense that it did sell that much. But I will also say this, Call of Duty, they will look at these numbers in a couple of weeks and then they'll say, okay, hold my beer, because they are definitely going to outsell this.
It's Call of Duty. In 3 days, though?
Well, I don't know. No, I don't know about 3 days. I have no idea about 3 days. I know that, obviously, Activision is definitely shook with Battlefield because the previous Call of Duty, I believe, they were offering a free demo for that the same day this game came out. So clearly, yes, they are paying attention to what EA is doing. And then the other thing is, we hadn't seen a Battlefield in a while, so we usually, when the game releases, it gets a pretty good response. Obviously, this one shows people were definitely looking forward to this, also because of the people involved in creating the game. But yeah, congrats to EA, but I think Call of Duty is definitely going to outsell this game. It probably will not be 3 days, but... definitely will outsell this game. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think over time, because it's, like you said, it's Call of Duty. But this is, like, massive. This is crazy. I like how IGN says it's a stunning return for the Battlefield franchise. Return? They've never seen numbers like this before. You know? This is crazy. Well,
maybe they mean by return, like, where they return again for this year?
No, they meant return. They said, because the last game flopped, absolutely flopped. You know,
the Battlefield 1,
Battlefield 2042. We'll see. I do think Call of Duty will ultimately win, but maybe, yo, that's what we need to do. We gotta tell Adam, yo, Vince Zampella made this game, man, because Adam doesn't really care about Battlefield too much, you know, he's a duty head.
He's a duty head. Oh, no.
He is a duty head. DUTY, you know, not the other duty. tell him that. It's like, yo, the guy behind Titanfall made this. I was like, yo, it's like Titanfall?
And it's in New York?
It's in New York.
So I think we could definitely ask him that. I did tell him they have a level totally developed, devoted to Brooklyn. And it reminded me of, you know, The Division, when I played it, I told him this. He still wasn't impressed. So, let's ask him about the Titanfield, you know, see what he feels about these people working.
I'll tell you this. Every time Adam talks about Battlefield, it's always on the defensive.
Always.
So, you know, it's sort of like, like you guys mentioned, the inner Call of Duty head, where it's like, I got to be on the defensive every time people talk good about Battlefield 6 or Battlefield in general.
That is kind of interesting. Well, go ahead, Rich.
One last thing I will add about Call of Duty. Obviously, yes, that's another game that people will be playing for the multiplayer. But for those that actually care about the campaign, it's a four-player campaign. So I kind of think that, because that's the main reason why Adam told me, yeah, I definitely want to play that with you guys when the game comes out, because you can play up to four players. So I think I'll be curious to see how those numbers are in relation to that. But obviously, they're going to say, forget about the single player. We just want the multiplayer. We don't care about no campaign. We just want to play the multiplayer maps. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And then I'm wondering, like, can it maintain this momentum? You know, like, not just in terms of, like, sales, because I don't think it's going to sell, like, another 7 million in another 3 days, but, like, will people continue playing this, you know, in the long haul for the weeks and months to come? It'll be interesting to see. But, you know, like we always say, competition is good. So if this is giving Call of Duty even some kind of competition, I think that's a good thing. Even though it is just another modern warfare type of game, you know? Oh, man. All right. So, yeah, we kind of talked about this. So let's get into it. Sucker Punch says that it will remain a single project studio for the foreseeable future. They said they, you know, just don't have the resources for, like, to make a multiple games. They're like, we don't even have enough to make a remaster of something. Like, we're just going to work on one game at a time. And I think this is just kind of, even though I know we've gotten a bunch of remasters, but it is kind of indicative of the game industry right now. It's like these games just take so long and it costs so much money. Although I heard that Ghost of Yote wasn't super as expensive as, like, you know, Concord or something like that. You know, so even if this game, and we're going to talk about the sales in a bit because there's some funny stuff happening, but even if the game doesn't sell like 50 million copies, it'll probably do okay because it didn't cost that much to make, you know?
Well, I mean, it kind of already just jumps off of the backs of what the original game did.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've played it, you know.
Yep.
It's pretty much more of the same.
Yep. Rich too. So more of the same. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I would say to Sucker Punch, whatever the next project is, no more Ghosts of Yote. Take a break from Ghosts of Yote, Tsushima. Just do something else, because they really can't do anything more with this franchise. You know, unless you're going to do another game with Jin. I mean, I don't know what else they can do.
Yeah, I agree.
I always say, like, you know, I felt like in general, it felt like more of the same because they chose to go with the same culture in Japan. Where, in other words, they could have done something about the Ainu culture, and it would have been totally different, a totally different type of game. Because not many people talk about that. There was for those who don't know, in Japan, there were two types of people. That there were the indigenous people of Japan, which had a totally different culture than what is considered Japanese culture.
Yeah.
So why not try something like that? Where, in other words, you're delving into something that is totally foreign from even Japanese people, most Japanese people, right?
Yeah, because they go for the easy way out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they wanted to make another samurai game, and that's, you know, but again, like, not even Japan has even really, that, you know, you see that culture kind of represented slightly in other games. Like, you'll see, like, Nakarudu from Samurai Showdown.
Nakarudu!
She's from that culture. You know, there's this new show that's currently on, you know, anime that has, Ainu people in it. You know, they're in it, and, you know, spread out over there, but there's never really been, like, a full-on, like, you know, movie or game about that.
Yeah. So this is what Sucker Punch had to say. The truth is that whatever we do next, whether it's continuing Ghosts or going back to Sly, the decision is really more limited by, again, our cherishing of focus and time to iterate, which means that we really can only do one thing at a time. If we were good at juggling four projects, yeah, we'd have a remaster, and let's go do one of those and do some fan requests, and that would be really popular, but we only get to do one thing. So it kind of has to do So it kind of has to be your best idea, right? And that's really clarifying. It's not like there aren't 15 good ideas, but you only get to do one. And by the way, you only get to do one about 5 years. So that choice is really important. I mean, that is choosing your college and your major every 5 years. Yeah.
What if they did smaller games?
They're not going to do that. That's the problem. You're right, though.
Obviously, you know, it's, you know, you take those two five-year games and you split them into two smaller titles, you can have more games out. I don't know, but, I guess it's because the expectation now is like, okay, everything needs to be these massive experiences, so.
Yep, that's the problem, you know? Massive experiences with, like, every type of gameplay possible, sort of just focusing on something, you know?
But I feel like, I definitely feel like, though, the reception of Ghost of Yotei may dictate what they do in the future, though.
Yeah.
If that game didn't do amazingly, I don't foresee them going down that line and making another one.
Yeah.
You know, so close.
No, I agree with that. But yeah, what do you guys think about Sucker Punch saying they're basically a one studio game, you know, one studio developer now, or one game developer now?
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, to be honest, like what is Insomniac doing that they can fucking do a Ratchet and Clank game and then do two Spider-Man games, like bookending a Ratchet and Clank game?
Yeah, that's crazy.
What are they doing?
Magic. That's what they're doing. All right. So, Manny, since you brought it up, let's get into it. Because one of the questions, and we've talked about this before, that's kind of hanging over the head of this game is like, how much have you sold? Like Sony, usually when if a PlayStation game sells very well, they'll let you know real quick, right? So far, we've only had estimates from third-party people. Sony has not said how much this game has sold, right? So this week, a report came out saying that Ghost of Yotei was like the best-selling game of the week, right, in Europe. Since when are we going with European sales all of a sudden, right? Which is kind of interesting. So I'm going to break this down, and I am getting this from a lot of people don't like this guy, Endymion, but he made some good points, even though I'm like, bro, you don't have any insiders. You don't know any fucking, like, because he made a video saying, like, somebody told him about how much the game is sold. I don't believe that. He's a YouTuber, but he does bring up some good points here. So the same guy, Chris Dring, who we've kind of chastised on his podcast before because he's not a very forthcoming person, if you will. So he's the one that put out the report, right, that this game is selling well in Europe. So I'm just going to read what Endymion wrote here. Says Ghost of Yotei sells very well. People believe it. Mentions the data is only in Europe. People ignore that and believe it means the entire world. Previously, the same guy wrote an article where he admitted that the game sold 40% less in Europe as well compared to the previous game. People conveniently ignore this because it doesn't help their gacha. Also says the game Yotei sold less than Spider-Man 2, a game that sold 50% less than the previous game. Article mentioned zero actual sales numbers, which is true. So it sold well that week, but the game, and the same guy admitted the game has sold 40% less than the previous game. And it's not selling as well as Spider-Man 2, which already sold less than the previous game, right? Because I know there's some in the game industry that they want to have a win against people they don't like. I'm trying to be very careful with my language here. So they need this game to quote unquote succeed, but you're being very facetious about it, using a lot of sophistry, let's just be honest, where you're like, oh yeah, it sold well in Europe. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you gotta mention that part. That's important, bro. You know, so I maintain, because we've heard reports that the game has sold 2 million. I believe it. I think it has. And I don't think Sony's happy about that. I think they probably wanted those Battlefield numbers. You know, they would have been happy with that. If this shit sold 5 million, which is still less than Battlefield, that would have been plastered all over the fucking place, you know? So I think this game probably has sold 2 million, but I don't think Sony's happy about that. As I've talked about in a previous podcast. Manny, you were going to say something?
No, I would agree with you. I think it's a decent number, but I don't think it's the number that I don't think it's what the game, you know, did during the pandemic, you know, like, you know, Ghost of Tsushima did, or, you know, but again, we're sort of seeing like a sort of, you know, deflation, I guess, of all these sorts of titles, right?
Yeah. I've said this before, right? Every single, like not every single, but at least many of the big PlayStation games that have come out in the last 5 years that are sequels, they have not sold as well as the previous one. The Last of Us 2, God of War Ragnarok, Horizon Forbidden West, and now this one have not sold as well as the previous one. That, and that's why I said this game, you know, it'll sell maybe 2 million, but it's not going to get close to the original one. Not even nowhere near it. The original one, I believe, sold 15 million copies. You know, this shit's not going to outsell it. You know, it, like, think about it this, right? How much hype are you seeing about this game on Twitter? I haven't seen much. Some of the fanboys may be hyping it up, but it's not like the original one, you know?
I saw some, you know, some stuff in Japan. They seem to be pretty happy with a lot of the certain things about that game. You know, they're like kind of like certain things about it, but that's about it. They're just showing little fun things about it. It doesn't, that's not indicative of everybody in Japan, but you know,
Manny, did you pass by the train station on 34th Street by the, you know, Hudson Yards while you were in Comic-Con? Because all the walls were lined with Ghost of Yote posters, all of them.
Actually, no, I actually went through went to 34th Street because I needed to take the one to get to my uncle's place. So yeah, I mostly just walked across town. So I hadn't actually seen the 7 train entrance.
But yeah, you know that long corridor that leads to the escalators, all that goes to Yote. All, you know, those huge posters and stuff that make up one giant image. You know. Oh, by the way, Manny, you'll love this. Comic-Con weekend, elevators were broken.
Of course, man. Yeah, I heard
That was not fun. But yeah, so a little bit of deception going on there. By the way, Reggie, I like how you wrote that. This game is selling well, ... in Europe. That's actually how I have it written down in my show notes. Ghost of Yote sells well, ... in Europe. Yeah, we're going with European sales now, right? Okay, bro.
Not worldwide sales.
Worldwide sales are the ones that count. And again, if Sony was happy with the sales numbers, they would have been plastering that shit everywhere. You know, like every game studio does.
Yeah, once it reaches like a significant number, that's when they're going to start saying.
But think about it like this, and I could be wrong. It took a long time, if they even said anything about Horizon Forbidden West. That was a running joke on Throwdown for a while. Remember, Brian, where's the sales numbers? Where's the sales numbers? He was like, hey, you know, we're on month 6. You know, where's the sales numbers? So I don't think that game sold as well as Sony wanted either. You know, it's interesting, man.
I feel like what's happened with the Sony thing about them is that every single instance of those sort of first party titles, it's like, yeah, it's more of the same. We're not seeing Uncharted 2 leaps forward as far as these games go.
Not at all.
It's almost like they just took DLC and just made a game out of it.
I don't know if we talked about this on the show, but I think this is a good time to bring it up. There was an article we did talk about this. We talked about it off air. there was that article from IGN about how all the major PlayStation games recently have been about either grief or revenge, you know? So I'm wondering if that's also playing a part into, not the article, but like, another one of these fucking games. Here we go. The world's all fucked up. Let me play a game that's going to make me feel even more fucked up, you know? I don't know if that's the case, but, you know, Ghost of Yote riding that same ground, you know? Oh, lost my family. Gotta murder everybody. You know,
I will say this.
Go ahead, Carlos, and then you go, Rich. No, you go first, Carlos. Talking.
Real quick, I wish that was true, but Astrobot didn't sell as well, like as you know, some of those higher echelon type games, as you know, for the Spider-Mans and those type of games.
But it was also a lower budget title too, so it did well for what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is a good example of a game that isn't about grief and revenge. You know, because I'm not saying it is. I'm just posing a question. I'm not making a statement here, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah, but like what I'm trying to figure out is like if there ever was like counter programming to the whole, you know, grief games that the PlayStation likes to do, like it would have been that one, and that one won Game of the Year.
Yeah,
but it still didn't sell as well as you would think. The best and, you know, most popular game of at least the year for PlayStation would sell.
Yeah,
which is unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. Should have sold better. You know, Rich, what were you gonna say, man?
Yeah, I have a response to that statement. I wanted to ask you if do you think that one of Carlos's most favorite games ever created, The Last of Us Part II, do you think that contributed to this storyline about the grief and the sadness and the revenge? Because that game, clearly, because somebody said, yeah, that's the best game this generation. So
yeah, that's a good question. You know, that's a phenomenal question. You know? yeah, because, and I, it's funny, even though that game didn't sell as well as the first one, it still made an impact when it did come out. So Sony at that time could have been like, and remember, Ghost of Yote has been in development for a long time, right? So it could have been, this worked for The Last of Us 2. Let's do it with this one too. That's just Tony speculating, but it's possible, you know? And also with God of War, hey, that worked with God of War. Sad Dad Kratos. Let's do that, you know? Blitz says, these studios releasing a great game and then going straight into a sequel is the issue, in my opinion. Let them try another IP, then do a sequel later. I agree, you know, but the problem is that if they do that, you're not going to see a sequel for 10 years. I'm not exaggerating, 10 years, because it takes 5 years to make games. So if you come out one game, then you develop another game that comes out in 5 years, then you go back to the sequel 5 years later, you know, yeah, man, this fucking industry's cooked. Oh, man, The Last of Us 2 and God of War was the same characters. I mean, not technically, but I know what you're saying. Like, there's a lot of the same themes. But there was a lot of PlayStation guys that weren't happy with that article. They were mad as fuck. Don't you dare talk about my PlayStation, you know? Like, come on, guys. Like, think about, like, don't. Because this is the internet. Everybody's take everything literally. Oh, what about this game? What about this? What about that? You know? And then the what aboutisms, it's like, oh, the Assassin's Creed, you know? Also, and Rich, I want to get your take on this too. Do you think Assassin's Creed may have contributed to this game not selling? Because people are like, one of my colleagues in the office was like, yo, I played this game already. I beat all the shadows. Like, I played this game already.
And that is exactly why I have been having trouble getting through this game, because the story is very similar to that female protagonist in the Assassin's Creed game. It's about her getting revenge on the people that killed her family. Now, there are nuances to the way they tell the story in Ghosts, because there's other things going on with other characters. But it pretty much feels like it's the same thing. I need to get revenge and kill all these people one by one. So, and I think now, obviously, Ubisoft would love to hear this. Yes, we want all the sales. So, yeah, you're damn right. This needs to get more attention than Ghost of Yote. But, yeah, it feels that was my main critique when I saw the game, when I saw them releasing the trailers. And I thought to myself, this feels exactly like a game that I already played this year. So do I really want to do this again? But, yeah, there are definitely similarities. So I could understand that being
it. Yeah. All right. Before we move on to the next thing, I just saw this on Twitter. And Jeff, if you're still in the chat, it looks like Shanghai is part of Team Falcons. Does that mean the Saudi Arabians are going to cheer for him finally? You know, I complained about this on a previous show. The Saudi Arabians, they have their like esports thing, right? And they only cheer for their guys, you know? So now I'm guessing they're going to finally cheer for Shanghai, even though he's been winning these fucking fighting game tournaments forever, you know? I hate that. It's like, yo, cheer these people on, bro. They're putting on a show for you, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's unfortunate that it's like, it's only just one direction. They're only cheering for their person.
Yeah, like Manny, during the finals, I believe it was for like Fatal Fury, quiet, because the two guys that were left, they weren't part of Team Falcons. Like, what the hell is the finals? Go nuts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's crazy. All right, so the last thing we're going to talk about, and, you know, this is something, obviously, we never want to do, but have to. We got to dedicate some time to someone that's passed away, man. A titan in the gaming industry. Tomonobu Itagaki, you know, who gave us the likes of Dead or Alive, helped revive Ninja Gaiden. He unfortunately has passed away at the age of 58. So I definitely want to, you know, give the man his respects because we all enjoyed his games, you know. Manny, were we gonna? You and I had a good conversation about this, like, because this guy, he knew something was wrong with him. We don't know how he passed away, but he left a message. Yeah, actually, you know what? Let me actually read what he says. He knew this was coming, so he had already written this, and he was like, "When I pass away, post it." So this is what you know, his account posted on Facebook. My last words: the flame of my life is finally about to be extinguished. The fact that this message has been posted means that the time has finally come. I am no longer of this world. I entrusted this final post to someone important to me. My life was a series of battles. I kept winning. I caused a lot of trouble for others too. I'm proud that I fought to the end, following my convictions. I have no regrets, except that I am extremely sorry that I could not give all my fans a new game. That's the way it is, so it goes. Tomonobu Itagaki. Man, that sounds like Itagaki too, you know? And Brett, Brett, what did you think? I know you love Dead or Alive. Those were like your jams, you know?
Yeah, man. Honestly, like that's way too young to go. But those are the words of a man that lived life his way, and I respect the shit out of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, like Because Itagaki was very different than the typical Japanese developer. Japanese developer, for the most part, are kind of quiet guys. You know, they're kind of unassuming. Not Itagaki. This motherfucker was always in your face. And he loved starting shit, you know. And he also burned a lot of bridges along the way, you know.
Yeah.
And one of the more kind of heartfelt tributes, man, you could talk about this, was Harada from Tekken, you know. They kind of had a rivalry. But it was really more Itagaki talking shit about Tekken than the other way around. Because Harada was like, wait, I thought we're cool. What's going on here? But, you know, we talked about this last year. Itagaki kind of reached out to Harada, and they kind of made peace, right? And then Harada was able to tell him how much he respected him and stuff. So he didn't take this news very well at all, man.
No, it's and the thing about it is, like, it's funny that all of that stuff came out that, like, it wasn't that last year, right? Talking about all that stuff, and then you find out all this thing, like, oh, you know, he really, you know, he did this interview, and he's like, yeah, he always, you know, he was somewhat jealous, and, you know, he wanted to push, you know, like, push back and all this stuff, and he saw them as a rival, but also as a, you know, as a contemporary, and, you know, Harada literally wrote this thing, like, you know, he didn't even know. He's like, the last conversation he had with Itagaki is like, hey, let's go get a beer. And he's like, yes, let's do it. And then after that, he actually posted his text to him, and he's like texting him, he's like, is this real? You know what's going on here? And there was no answer.
Fuck.
So it's like, wow. He didn't even know. So it's like, again, I suspect that Itagaki knew that there was something happening with him, either some sort of health issue or something he knew, and that he was possibly, you know, making amends at the end, you know.
Yeah.
Cleaning house and stuff like that. That's, you know, again, like, we don't know what happened to him, but he seemed like he knew something was wrong with him.
Yeah. Let me read this real quick. You know, IGN wrote this. It's pretty good. About just, you know, quick snapshot of his career for somebody who may not know. Joining Tecmo in the early 1990s, Itagaki created Dead or Alive, working on 7 titles in the fighting series, including its move into beach volleyball. He also played a key role in reviving Ninja Gaiden with 2004's Xbox exclusive Ninja Gaiden reboot and subsequent games. However, he made a dramatic exit from Tecmo in 2008, suing the company for damages in Tokyo District Court, a matter that was eventually settled. He subsequently went on to found Valhalla Studios with former members of Team Ninja and directed Devil's Third, which released in 2015. In 2021, he established Itagaki Games with the aim of producing a new work, but unfortunately, that never happened. So, yeah, he's had a pretty illustrious career. And it's funny reading all this. I'm like, oh, yeah, on Throwdown, we've covered all this stuff. Like, oh, shit, he has a new game. Oh, shit, he has a new studio. you know? But yeah, no, again, the thing that always stuck out with me is like his like personality. It's like, I was like, when you see him, you know, with the glasses, the leather jacket, I'm like, this guy's a fucking rock star. Not very typical Japanese game developer, you know? And then one of this is something Harada wrote in that super thread from last year. He talked about how he always thought Itagaki didn't respect him, you know, because Itagaki was always talking shit. You know, like, for example, you know, he was in some magazine interview. They asked him, what are your five most hated games? And he listed every Tekken game that was available at that time. Like, he was talking all this shit. But then, you know, I think it was last year, Itagaki talked to Harada. He's like, listen, like, all that stuff I said, it's because I viewed your game as a true rival to Dead or Alive, and I had nothing but respect for you. You know, it's like, oh shit, you know, Itagaki said that. And it's crazy because obviously, you know, we're getting a new Ninja Gaiden. He didn't work on it, but it's part of that legacy, you know. And that was a great game, great revival. Unfortunately, I didn't have an Xbox at that time, so I didn't get to play the first game until years later, but I did play Ninja Gaiden 2 Black, I believe, and that's kind of considered the gold standard. It was just a great game, man. And people have been posting clips of this guy, you know, Itagaki talking about how, like, yeah, man, like, you know, I only make games that are interesting to me, and I like sex and violence. That's what I'm putting in my game. So, like, yeah, man, that's dope, you know? So, yeah, shout out to Itagaki, man. Rich, you got anything you want to say about Itagaki?
Yeah, I definitely want to say rest in peace. A legend. I agree 100%. Way too young to go. There was quite a bit of deaths this week. Another one even younger than this one. So, that's very, very rough to see all this stuff happening. And again, when there's so many influential people passing before their time. He did a phenomenal job on all the stuff that he worked on. Just rest in peace is all I could say.
Yeah. You know, Carlos, you got any memories of Itagaki games, Ninja Gaiden, Dead or Alive?
Yeah, man. How he brought it back with on the 360. That's one of those things, one of those games that people don't remember. 360 in its own run, it also had Ninja Gaiden, and it was a pretty big deal back then. Shout out to him. Going back to the whole narrative that I always bring up almost every week now, it's like part of the thing with gaming and game development that we've lost is sort of those directors that oversee everything and have creative visions to create games. He's just another example of those that, you know, we've lost. And, you know, unfortunately, the way things are going, we'll probably never get back.
Yeah. And even though I knew this was not going to happen, because, again, Itagaki burned a lot of bridges, there was still a piece of me that held out hope that he would come back to Dead or Alive and, save that franchise and maybe come back to Ninja Gaiden. Again, I knew it was not going to happen, but, you know, there was still that little bit because, like you said, he was one of those directors where you felt his presence. And, you know, when you play games that are franchises that he helped make that he didn't direct, you feel the difference, you know? There was that certain edge. I know Xbox guys really got to be feeling because he was making a lot of Xbox exclusives. Those Dead or Alive games after 3, they were all Xbox exclusives because he didn't like Sony. He had a problem with them, you know? So he burnt that bridge too. But shout out to Itagaki. Definitely one of those guys that, you can't replace him. There's not going to be another Itagaki, you know?
It was so. I saw all this happening at like real time at like 3 a.m. in the morning.
That's crazy.
And it was just all of a sudden, you just see all this outpouring of like, you know, because I'm following a lot of, you know, Japanese directors. So, you know, you see like, you know, Yoko Taro, and you see, obviously, you know, the head of Tekken, you see like Capcom guys, all these people, like, all these people just saying like, oh my God, what's going on? Because it's like, you would think that, you know, there has been, you know, passings in the game industry, right?
Yeah.
But nobody on the level of Itagaki as of yet. You know, Miyamoto's still alive. You know, a lot of the, you know, former creators of a lot of these franchises are still alive and kicking. So, and he, in hindsight, is the youngest.
Yeah, one of the youngest. Yeah, that's right. Yep. That's crazy. So yeah, shout out to Itagaki, man. Definitely will be missed. All right, I guess we could start wrapping things up here. Oh, you got to, Otaku Man says he got to meet him a couple of times. And I know Danny Pena, he posted some stuff. So yeah, man, if you guys, if you guys got stuff, man, share it, you know?
Yeah, his, in fact, Danny's, you know, Danny's tweet is actually was on that IGN article.
Oh, nice.
You know, because they also aggregated a lot of, you know, people who've had, you know, things to say about Itagaki. So he was on there. Capcom people were on there. You know, a lot of folks that were, you know, developers in Japan were all, you know, again, it's like, whoa, really? Out of all people, him?
Yeah. Yeah, because you thought he was like be a very, because he was a pretty divisive guy, you know?
Yeah.
And again, it's just interesting. We're using all these adjectives that you wouldn't normally associate with a Japanese developer, you know? Like, I think the only one that comes close is probably fucking, Hideki, you know? Hideki Kamiya. Mm-hmm. He's wild one, too, you know?
Or you know, again, you have all these sort of character sort of directors. Like, again, like Yoko Taro, you have the former head of Yakuza, that guy.
Yeah.
You know, like these really sort of, even Tak Fuji to an extent.
Our boy. One, you know, Mirian troops. I was actually thinking about Tak Fuji last night, you know?
Like, you know, he hasn't stopped. I mean,
no, he hasn't.
He is still making games, not on the, you know, level of 1 million troops.
Extreme. Extreme.
Now that I think about it, a lot of Japanese directors are pretty eccentric.
Oh, they're eccentric.
I mean, Kojima is eccentric. Oh, yeah. Suda 51 is eccentric.
The difference with Itagaki was he was like abrasive. That was the difference, you know? But you're right. They're all quirky, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, remember fucking, oh my God, Ono-san from Street Fighter always with the fucking Blanca, you know?
Yeah, it's
very eccentric guy. Suda 51, yes, another one.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, Suda's also is in sector. He's also, well, I would say also very sort of punk rock and very abrasive too. Like, he'll say some crazy shit, you know? Yeah.
But he's never talked shit about other people that I've seen too much, you know?
No, he's never, you know,
Hideki does, though.
Hideki Kamiya does. He's also like, he's Mr. Jacket too.
So, yeah, you there know? You go, yeah. For some reason, I feel like Hideki Kamiya's tweets are meaner. You know, like Itagaki, like even though when he was talking shit, it never felt as like vicious as Hideki Kamiya's, you know?
I feel like also Hideki Kamiya has also like his, because he's become so frustrated with the internet in general that he just throws it right back at everybody.
Yeah.
If you see interviews with him, he's actually quite nice.
Yeah.
Like, it's the total opposite of his Twitter persona.
Yeah, like, I've never seen Itagaki say, "Away with you, worm."
Yeah. He says, "Away with you, worm," to all those, you know, the complaining fans.
Yeah, it's hilarious, man. Actually, before we actually wrap up, let's switch gears a little bit, because I do want to dedicate a little bit of time for this. Because, Manny, you were at Comic-Cons last week.
Yes, I was.
So if you want to tell us some cool stories, the floor is yours.
Oh, I mean, you know, it went, you know, sort of by the numbers, sort of Comic-Con, though. I would have to say it was nice to be back after at least, because I have not, you know, the way Comic-Con and a lot of conventions was, you know, no matter if you apply for it, it still all depends on your reputation and, you know, whether they still have to choose who they do. So, you know, who they put in. So this year it was nice to come back, and it was a good time, because it was like they had a lot of the Metal Gear, you know, voice actors in, you know, to do signings. There was a lot, you know, Marvel and DC actually had booths this year, which is crazy. I think it's been over 10 years since they've had booths.
I don't know about 10 years, but it's been a while. Yes.
it's been a long time since they've had not had booths. So it was nice to see that again at the table. Again, it was really nice to see all the folks that decided that you know came to visit. You know, Dio came to visit. You know, obviously Barry Burton is always great to see him.
Yeah, man,
super cool to have him there. You know, you got a couple little things from Barry there. You know,
I forgot to wear the hat tonight, but I gotta bring that for the next show. Yeah, so people show it, see it.
And the Midnight Club. Club hat that he got with the thing there.
Barry Bird just said hashtag boycott New York Comic Con 2026.
and then he'll be there too. Seeing being there and you know people that remembered me from the last time I was there, you're like, hey, you haven't been here for a while, have you? I'm like, yeah, I haven't been here for a while. And again, it was a really great experience to sort of be back there again. And you know, I got to connect with a couple of you know people I hadn't seen in a while. My neighbor, who was right next to me, he actually is somewhat game connected.
Oh, nice.
He currently draws the Little Nightmares comic for Namco Bandai. So he was, you know,
I like how you went with the old name.
Yeah, Namco Bandai or Bandai Namco.
It's Bandai Namco now. Yeah.
So yeah, he's the artist for those books. So it was nice to you know talk to him. He's from like Sweden, so he came in all from literally the other side of the world to do the show, and he did very well. So it was nice to meet him and hang out with him. You know, have a nice neighbor. You know, to talk to, because I was unfortunately this year I was all on my lonesome because my buddy who's you know usually you know helps me at the table, he had some health issue, he couldn't make it in. It was just a lot of really cool things to just see. You know, a lot of people came to visit. Kari came on Thursday.
Nice.
My longtime partner in crime and comics. He made a mysterious appearance, and he was apparently in the sea for a bit, and he got into the show and came in on Thursday. So I got a little photo with him, and we got to, you know, here's the thing. I don't see Kari all the time, but I talk to him every single fucking day. Right. Cause we work together.
Yeah.
But you know, he's obviously now he moved over to Vienna. So
that's crazy.
He's out on the other side of the world. But yeah, again, like great show. What else are the things like? You know, I didn't get around too much. Like, you know, Artist Alley people are able to walk around the shows. So I was able to get like a few con exclusives. So I got this special Storm Collectibles Ken figure.
Nice.
So it's pretty cool. Funny thing is that the Ken figure that I already had from Big Bad Toy Store is gone, so I have two Kens hanging around here on my desk. It was great to see everybody. Thank you all for who came to the show, who visited me at my table.
It's shout out to Dio.
To see you. Shout out to Dio. Shout out to all the other folks that came by. Hope to see you next year for New York Comic Con 2026.
That's crazy, man. Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, no, it's definitely back to what it used to be.
Oh my God, that place was utterly packed. Like it was like the last one I think I did was in 22, and it was a decent amount of people. But no, this was definitely every day was packed. I heard rumors that they're going to be moving it to Wednesday.
Oh wow, like
Wednesday be so Wednesday Comic Con
week.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That is going to be crazy because, you know, they have us in there like from 10 a.m. Well, more like 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. So that's long hours.
That's crazy. That's a whole week, basically.
Yeah, it's literally a whole
week. It is because it's 5 days. Yeah.
Yeah, it's 5 days. Yeah, crazy stuff. But yeah, good stuff. And I hope everybody had a good show who went there and had a hang out and stuff. Tony showed up for like a couple of seconds to say what's up.
Yeah, but you became Mr. Popular. I'm like, let my man work, you know? And then I got shuffled off.
For some reason, it just got really packed at the point that you jumped back there.
That's funny.
So there were some points that are there. Also,
that's good, though, man.
My, my friend Ruby and Ashiri decided to come by in their cool costumes. Ruby was dressed up as Hariko from Silent Hill F, very sort of. But she was wearing the fox mask version of her, so that was pretty cool. And my other friend was dressed up as I don't exactly know what she was dressed up. It looked cool though; it had some pretty cool armor and stuff. They always go all out for them. It was great to see. My friend Ruby gave me this, so she usually gives me a little something like a little care package when I go. So I got another Calorie Mate. So nice. That's fun. And then I got this other thing, which I've never seen before, but in Japan, there's like 1,000 different versions of Kit Kat. So you can get green tea, you can get strawberry. This one was sake flavored.
Interesting.
Or it had sake, some sake in it. I can't read it. I have to use a translation thing to see what it said on the side of it. But yeah, apparently it smelled like sake. It was actually quite good. It's kind of like having rum in your candy, if you think about it.
Oh yeah, I've had candy before. Had that.
Yeah, where it has like a little like almost like a droplet of rum.
Yeah,
in it. You can smell the rum like right because of the alcohol. But yeah, same situation with it. It was like white chocolate, but with some sake in it. It was quite good.
Nice. All right, man. To start wrapping it up. And then Manny, since you were talking, do you have anything to plug?
Oh, well, okay. So during the week of Comic-Con, what was it? Timothy Journeys number two with our Casey Jones cover, Kari and myself, has just dropped. So that's out on the streets right now. So if you're a big fan of the Ninja Turtles 2003 series, we have a special Casey Jones cover that's out there for you. Also, not to mention, I don't remember exactly. We do have Power Rangers TMNT that's currently running right now. So that's going to be coming real. That's coming real soon. And then we also have TMNT Battle Nexus, which is coming in the future, which is the Ninja Turtle, which will have all the different versions of Ninja Turtles fighting each other. So the big one for us on the 2003 one is the fact that it's going to be 2003 versus the 2012, which is literally the two shows that are adjacent. So that there's a cover right now that Kari and I did, which is also halfway done by, the other half is done by the artist and designer of TMNT 2012. So a lot of people are really excited about it. So yeah, that's all coming up. I'm trying to think about what other nostalgic things are coming out right now for that. But there's also the book that that is coming out currently, which I'm working on with covers with Kari, is Blood and Thunder, which is Robert Kirkman's new book that's nice. Currently coming out right now. It's being drawn by AJ, who drew Tech Jacket originally. So it's the original artist for Tech Jacket with Robert Kirkman on words. So those are currently coming out right now, and Kari and I have a cover run with them. So we have a few more covers to go with that, but they should be coming out real soon. Keep an eye out for that. Blood and Thunder is a really pretty fun one. It's a very sort of more sci-fi than superhero sort of story for Robert. So yeah, that's it for now until we only have a few more months of this year. So we'll see what happens.
By the way, I think those will be good characters for the Invincible game. Tech Jacket and the Astonishing Wolfman. They are on the show. So
no, they should be in that. Yeah. They should be in that game.
They should be. That'd be fun, especially Tech. I think in the show, Tech Jacket's a girl, which is interesting.
They haven't fully revealed it yet because they just kind of based it was on a the
super 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 cameo. Yeah, it was very like both Tech Jacket and Astonishing Wolfman were just cameos, like during the Invincible War arc. You know, like that you saw them fighting in the background. Like, ooh, toss them in the game.
One good thing about having them, you know, because funny enough, me and Kari were a part of that Invincible War. In fact, our first issue on Tech, for the revival of Tech Jacket was an issue of the Invincible where he's fighting literally a bunch of Invincibles.
Yeah.
And it's funny because of Tech Jacket showing up on that, in those books. Now there has been more interest in the character of Tech Jacket. So AJ's original run is starting to get, there's a nice omnibus that's coming out real soon.
Oh, that's cool.
And yeah.
Oh, so because Tech Jacket appeared in the show. People are like, oh, what's that?
Yeah, people are more interested in the character. Like, who's that character? Oh, that's Tech Jacket. That's the other Robert Kirkman character that was running at the same time as Invincible.
Yeah, he was a lot of characters at that time. Wolfman, the other one. You know,
Wolfman's more astonishing. Wolfman's more of a later character, but yeah, he was also in a part of that Invincible, and he has made cameos in there. And there's also that I can't remember that FBI guy. I can't remember his name. He's also popped up in Wolfman Cecil. As well. So, yeah, he has also been in it as well. So
yeah,
there's a lot. There's a big old connected universe.
Yeah, I think Astonishing Wolfman, he didn't appear in Invincible War. He may have appeared in one of the other wars. I'm not going to spoil spoilers, but if it's Invincible, you know there's going to be another war of some kind.
There's going to be some sort of Viltrumite war.
Something. Happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And Rich, what's coming up on the Coalition this weekend? Mr. Richard Bailey Jr. There he is.
Yeah. So first and foremost, shout out to Mr. Adam Vale, the TV Terminal. I always forget how many shows they're covering, but I will just say, check out the channel. Stay tuned. I may actually be on their next recap for Gen V because I have been watching that show, and it is the season finale. So look for that. As for what we're doing here at the Coalition, this weekend is the season finale of The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon. So Mr. Adam Vale, Carlos Romero, and myself, we will be recording that finale episode. You can look for that on Sunday. Stay tuned for that. And as for what else is coming, there is some reviews that are currently being worked on. One very important review that's coming very soon. So stay tuned for that. That's all I can say right now.
Yep, that's all we can say. You know, but if you've listened to this episode carefully, you may know what it is. That's all we're going to say. Yeah. All right, man. It's all wrapping up. So make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Subscribe on YouTube and join the Discord. Shout out to all the new Discord members. You guys are awesome. You could also find us on, you know, your favorite podcast app, whatever that may be, whether it's Spotify or iTunes, you know. We're all over the place, so go check us out. Links to everything down below. Once again, our show is Tony Polanco, and tonight was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
Deuces.
And Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
All right, guys. We shall return on Sunday. Later.
Peace.
This is...